good evening, one and all, and welcome to this very special programme coming to you live from the bar at Hutton Orbital. And we're joined in spirit by our colleagues and friends far, far away at Fort Mugg and Colonia. Hello, Colonia!
Hello, everyone. I'm Wilma Fingerdoo, and I'm delighted to stand at the bar that serves drinks like the Red Queen's Jam. Drinks yesterday, drinks tomorrow, but never drinks today.
I'm Hank Eyre, and I'm not stupid. I brought a hip flask.
I'm Norma Snuckers, and I brought a flask as well. Keeps my tea lovely and hot. Where did I put those sandwiches?
I'm Mia Harkness, and I can't see what all the fuss is about.
We'll be wandering about a little later, but first, it's the headlines.
Ready, unsteady, go!
After you, Cecil. No, no. After you, Claude.
The name's Zuno. Alex Zuno.
Fleet carriers, get the boot.
Apex, not too shabby cabby, is Taxi Maxi.
An architect in wolf's clothing.
Save Alvin's throne!
News of events that you've organised, and they're not in a brewery.
And we have a special announcement.
Yesterday's compulsory grounding of the entire galaxy's fleet of ships and SRVs was a mammoth event. Pilots far and wide were given notice that all ships and SRVs had to be inspected in order to determine if the new comfy seats could be fitted. The ones with the seatbelt that can actually be released to allow you to stand up. And stations all over the bubble have been given a new cone to paint, new vending machines, well, and new bar staff that do everything but serve booze have been employed. This upgrade is not, unfortunately, available to everyone at this time. The Galactic Authorities have blamed import restrictions caused by Brexit, and have shrugged off claims that they really should have sorted this out in nearly 1300 years by saying that there was no way to foresee that making the systems that create the new seats for hotbox and hot piss ships permit locked, and forcing pilots to gather enough engineering materials to upgrade a fleet carrier for each shipment would cause any delays. Luckily, for the other pilots, the upgrades have taken place. People have been streaming back to the bubble to get ready for the Great Leg Over, as the event has come to be known. For example,
Commander Waller 81 emerged from the gloom of his cockpit to find that he had an entire family that he'd forgotten and that they had not eaten since 3304. Taking his place in the now unfamiliar galley, he paused only to find a red checked tea towel and to roll his eyes because the spices were no longer in alphabetical order, before chopping, bunging everything in a pot and going back to check if his pilot's chair had yet been upgraded, apparently pressing F5 every 37 milliseconds can fix that.
Happy Moon Monkey, the subject of his own story last week, completed his 65,000 light-year round trip to the centre of the galaxy. He said universe, but we think that's on par with the World Series for geographical accuracy, so he could see what colour Cecil's eyes went in the improved lighting in the bar.
Zulu Romeo was out earning money. He doesn't say how, and it's probably best not to ask. The man wears a flight helmet when he's relaxing, for goodness sake. And he's going to spend it just as soon as he works out what upgrades his fleet's going to need now.
Commander Panarchist tried very hard to crossbreed his SRC with part of a planetary base in a bizarre Terminator Does Dallas event, but was forced to leave the planet in a hurry in a case of premature evacuation just so he could try and get to Hutton before Cecil polished off the new supplies we got in last night.
Commander Andran set off for Hutton as he'd broken his mug, but like many commanders, was left floating in space for a day during that long shutdown that made a Thargoid high prediction feel like something that if you'd blink, you'd miss it.
Commander Ice and Airy decided that they'd spend their time helping at Delphi, getting passengers of the complaining variety onto the rescue ship, and for once, without incurring any fines. Still, Commander Ice and Airy did admit that they got the wrong fittings on their pilot's chair, and so have to wait for the new supplies later in the year. We suspect that it was just something to do to take their mind off the wait.
A pilot has come to us with a modern conundrum worthy of Flossie's Agony Ant column. More complex than, when is the right time to tell my parents I'm dating a Thargoid? Is it okay to spend the night with another pilot if I only do it as a hollow me? Or even, is it wrong to have strange feelings for my prospector limpets and experience a stirring near my groin or attachment when one expires? What our correspondent wants to know is that if you're in a combat zone and you see another commander appearing in the opposing team, is it acceptable for a trucker to shoot them? As you will no doubt know, the first rule of being a trucker is be awesome to each other. Now that's a tricky use of wording, because the original meaning of awe was reverential fear or wonder, so awesome could be taken to mean to inspire fear. This is, of course, not what we intend. We use awesome in the modern sense of at least a bit better than average, and that is all anyone can aspire to in this day and age, isn't it? Where was I? Oh yes. Should you shoot first? After all, although Hutton espouses PWP, that's player with player, combat between pilots is permissible, so long as both parties consent. Can't I think of it? That covers quite a few different interactions that pilots might have. Sorry, distracted again. It could be argued that by entering a combat zone and picking a side, you have implicitly consented to engage in shooty-shooty bang-bang-pew-pew activities. But if at all possible, we at Hutton prefer to keep to the moral high ground. Well, it's easier to pick people off from up there. The answer is Twatniff. You don't need me to tell you what Twatniff means. Yes, that's pronounced Twatniff. Has enabled us to keep our heads high when keeping our powder dry and our hand in our halfpenny. Twatniff stands for Truckers Wait Until the Naughty Infiltrator Fires First. Unlike Han Solo, we prefer to have the other guy let the side down first.
It is said that if you want to be able to sniff out a pirate, all you need to do is stand close to your suspect and whisper, Alex Zuno. The whirling around, the heartfelt, panicky cry of, where? And the spray of sweat mingled with fear will tell you all that you need to know. Alex, as we've mentioned before, wants to take all that she's learned and distill it into a form that can help other pilots. After all, there are plenty of bad guys to go around, and the winner's podium can be a lonely place if there's no one to share it with. We've kept you up to date with the work of Alex, that Alex has been putting her magnum opus, the treasure map that will lead you to the goal of actually being worthy to shine her boots. And who knows, maybe one day to step into them. Assuming your feet are the right size, that is. Well, the good news is that following extensive academic research, as well as dry cleaning bills for the blood of her enemies, the second part of this map for Marauders has been completed. Detailed analyses, uplifting prose, accompanied by illustrative videos, adding up to something to make Sun Tzu jealous, and to enable any assiduous student of the noble art of pew-pew to improve their effectiveness. So if, when someone asks you the question, how many pirates are there in the galaxy? Your answer is, too many. Or you just fancy seeing your name up there in lights at hot.forthemug.com and maybe having the apology officer mangle your name, then it's time to go to bit.ly/Zuno, what to do? Fill your head with knowledge, yourself with courage, and your ammo boxes with shells. Go out there and make Alex proud.
The Galactic Clamping Squads were out in force last night as fleet carriers all over the galaxy were quickly fitted with the so-called Denver Station Boot, which disrupts their engines and prevents them from moving. Pilots on board have been expressing their frustrations as they really wanted to get out and stretch their legs. Now, we're not sure whether this drastic measure is due to some bureaucratic mix-up, but it did occur soon after a problem which prevented many pilots from being able to enter their ships. So our guess is that it may have had something to do with quantum. Maybe the super large engines of the fleet carriers were having an unbalancing effect on the universe, changing the properties of space-time, forcing pilots to walk the planks constant, or maybe the Kamora pirates were demonstrating what could happen to all those nice fleet carriers if they were to get accidentally damaged. All we know is that enforced idleness is not a good state for a trucker. So let's hope they get them moving soon.
During the period known as Alpha, when people were getting their kinks out of their legs, a number of commanders expressed an opinion that Apex taxis were slow. Definitely slow. Much slower than their Clipper, DBX, Adder, Anaconda, Delete as appropriate. We didn't agree then, and we definitely don't agree now, and we have the data to prove it. Several people have now taken a taxi to Hutton, claim it that it gives them a chance to catch up on their correspondence, or indeed sleep, without worrying about overshooting and ending up practically on the other side of the galaxy. We understand that this will be of particular interest to Taran 4295 and Marco 2612, or at least it will be in 6 months' time. But for now, Lenin 83 and Adley Wise have been taken for a ride, and their taxi arrived in 1 hour 23 minutes 58 seconds and 1 hour 23 minutes and 59 seconds respectively. And faster, but just a few hours ago, Happy Moon Monkey's taxi driver beat them both by 9 seconds. And retired Navy IT-1's super quick ride was 4 seconds faster even than that, which incidentally is just 28 seconds short of his own personal best. We think that the taxi drivers have gone a bit Commander Hardy and are competing against each other. They've decided that they can't just sit around and wait for a call. They've been rounding up passengers and taking them for a ride to Hutton Orbital and charging for the privilege. Around 2,500 credits if you're interested, just for the chance of a decal to put on their ships. Beware foot passengers of the galaxy. When you call Apex and the cab turns up, just check the state of the paintwork and the brightness of the gleam in the driver's eye before you board, unless you've got a very good book that you want the chance to finish.
Lael Wolf seems to have undergone some changes this week. For a start, she's no longer a progenitor, apparently, but an architect. And this apparent rise in status means that she no longer deals with the hoi polloi, the pilots who turn up at the mission window saying, "Giz a job." Instead, you speak to a mission giver, Sakura Briant, who is also an architect, but presumably a more junior one. And only once the contract is signed will they'll get involved and give you the details. The Picard look seems to have caught on with the team Lael, as Sakura Briant and Lael both sport shiny domes, and in fact there seems to be quite the resemblance between the two ladies. Could it be that Briant is actually Lael's unacknowledged daughter? There were rumours of a special closeness between Lael Wolf and a certain Cecil B. Trumpington a few years ago, and although both parties denied it at the time, Briant does have bright, almost luminescent blue eyes, much like Cecil at the end of a long evening, or the gin bottle. Further proof, if proof were really needed that the Appletini doesn't fall far from the tree, comes in the form of the missions that she's handing out. No one who wasn't raving, drunk, or both would hand out missions leaving from Hutton to turn on the power at a base in Colonia and offer 170,000 credits for the privilege. She must be related to Lael in order to get the job with that degree of incompetence, and presumably a job in government doesn't appeal to her. As the saying goes, keep your friends close, your enemies closer. And as for your family, well, don't let them out of your sight for a moment.
On Monday, Sirius Corporation crept to within 3% of Hutton, in the mother system, Alpha Centauri, and are currently only 6% off initiating a war to challenge Hutton for control of our own home system. While you've been all distracted, trying to add insult to 10th Fleet's election injury in Barnard Star, looking down at your new legs, imagining where your new legs are going to take you, admiring your legs in the mirror, doing a little dance, it never occurred to any of you that, yes, your bum does look big in that flight suit, and that Sirius Corporation have taken advantage of the situation, and even now are measuring up Alvin's throne for a spot of reupholstering. Get to it, Tuckers. Forget you have legs and truck like you've never trucked before to save our home system. Whilst you're in a Save the Galaxy mood, two of the systems are also below 40% this week. Barnard Star and Wolf 1481 are in need of a boost as they're floundering on 36%. Pirate scum have taken advantage of Inspector Henke's enhanced busing activities and have slipped into Trepin to cause trouble. So get in there, punch their tickets and turn them into little pretty clouds of space confetti. At the top end of the Hutton System League, six systems are above 60%, with two of those above 70%. Whilst you're all staring hopefully at your download bars last night, Hutton expanded from Wolf 124 into the Aspellini system. Since it already has two-player factions, one of whom is the Earth Defence Fleet, and is generally a dark, nasty little place, we're not staying. Ignore the war we just triggered there against Frog Court Pond Life, but if you can't resist a bit of pew-pew, fight for the amphibians against Hutton. Meanwhile, in Colonia Gulag, Comrade Hanky instructs that truckers work in Ale, Procol Centauri, and Tyr, we have election in both system. He added that you should grab them by the Ballylikers. And remember that in Soviet election, there is only one candidate. We still need to leave Hotel Carson and Ari, where commanders are now complaining to the hotel management about slow data download speeds and narrow bandwidth. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, boost Hutton influence in Alpha Centauri and save Alvin's throne from a reupholstering by the Sirius Corporation. If you want to shoot something, ignore 10th Fleet and clear the pirates out of Trepin. We still need to exit Carson and Ari, so help any of the factions there except Hutton.
Here's the latest news on events created and led by community members. Firstly, we've got news of the reluctant returner, Eris Maidlung, who's been waiting until he can get back on his own two feet, metaphorically speaking. The fleet carrier FTM Isfahan will be attempting to start up its FSD and head home sometime Friday night, assuming it's been unclamped. So far, all commanders on board are reporting first footfall on various planets. All commanders are reminded to wipe your bloody feet. Commander Mephisto has been keeping us up to date with his expedition, and this week's report is as follows. The 10th week of the Comfy Cannon cruise began with Consu's arrival in Asura near Colonia shortly after last week's show. On shore leave, the passengers formed wings to make Pennsylvania more secure by fighting pirates and generally enjoyed being back in civilization, as yet another commander, Commander Servalon, reached Exploration Elite by selling his collected data. When the on-foot permits became available, many commanders using the PC control system jumped right into exploring the new possibilities and will enjoy them over the next few weeks. This weekend, as we've mentioned before, on May the 22nd at 2100 BST, that's 2000 UTC, Commander Venezia has organised what he's calling the Texas Lakon Massacre, which we think is a good opportunity to set out those new skills you have got from absorbing Alex Duno's knowledge. He describes as, in honour of all that Bucknecket has done on the radio show for the Hutton Truckers and his love of Lakon Speakways, we'll be using a T7 to mine and act as bait for pirates in Hazares in Wolf 1481. The T7 will be escorted by two small ships and a medium ship of your choosing. The goal is to defend the T7 while it mines and racks up some bounties with the escort ships. Details are on our Facebook events page, which will be pasted into the chat. Only 2 weeks until the Artemis Biological Survey 2 starts, organised by the Deep Space Network, to travel around inner Orion Spur, exploring the solar systems in search of new biological features and exceptional geological formations in partnership with Vista Genomics. The expedition sets off on June the 4th and they return on July the 11th. Details, including their Discord, being operated jointly in English and in French, can be found at bit.ly/ArtemisSurvey2. And don't forget that July the 14th Hanky Party is getting ever closer, celebrating his 6th fleet carrier. Schedule on the Facebook events page. A link will be pasted in chat. As always, we want to hear from you about any events you're organising or even just have heard about. We're always happy to spread the word.
We now have a special announcement. As of last night, Trucker's Folly is not just a term to describe the behaviour of the average trucker, but it's a real place. It's a station on a planet somewhere. Trucker's Folly was conceived as a sort of holiday camp for truckers who want to take a few days off and relax. It was planned to include all of the usual pleasurable activities you'd expect, such as bingo, cheek-to-cheek dancing for people who didn't want to face their partner, knobbly knobs competitions, a creche, which is not what Flossie terms one of her so-called reverse landings if she happens to be talking to royalty, for parents to be able to enjoy their megagin in peace. And rain would be imported for that truly authentic soggy holiday camp experience. Advertisements have gone out asking for staff to apply for positions as purple coats to look after the guests. And the old stereotype of drunken, lecherous so-called red coats would certainly be avoided here, as we employed a Mr. C.B. Trumpington to instruct the staff in their duties. That is, of course, all dependent on us finding it. We had the plans, Nocti 3D printed it, and Cecil put a pin in the galaxy map to show where it should be delivered. But he ended up using the map as a docking darts target, and can't remember which hole represents the location, or even if indeed it's the same map. Now, we did get a card slipped under the door of our offices at the Orbital with a "Sorry you were out" message, so we know it's been delivered. We really should have called it Camp Heisenberg, because we definitely know its velocity, zero. It's going nowhere. But we haven't the foggiest idea of its location. Now, the Pilots Federation did send Vantian a nice souvenir to commemorate us setting up Trucker's Folly, with biological samples and a nice biodome to cultivate them. But anyone who's listened to this programme for any length of time will know that there's a kind of split in the space-time continuum outside Vantian's door, meaning that most deliveries don't arrive at all, or are left in a neighbour's waste recycling, or, as in this case, arrive as a ready-to-use 50,000-piece 3D glass jigsaw. The good news is that the commemorative plaque survived the impact of landing and will be kept in a secure cupboard with Alvin's second-best bowl, all of which is leading up to this. Truckers, we need you to help us find our holiday camp. All we know is that the port name is Trucker's Folly. The economy type is tourism, and the location is Balkow, B-A-L-K-O-W, Legacy. So, 1. Where is it? 2. Is it an atmospheric world? 3. Does it look cool? 4. What services does it have? 5. What are the local factions? 6. Who owns it? Over to you, truckers. Fly, my pretties, fly. Doesn't 400 billion sound like a big number when you say it out loud?